This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.com.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free at 877-9527-870. And if you want a chance to win tickets to the MSU Notre Dame game, give us a call at 353-5000. That's 353-5000, area code 517, and register for a chance to win tickets to MSU Notre Dame. Well, let's talk about the MSU Notre Dame, a game coming up on Saturday with our good friend Rico Beard from Fox Sports Detroit. Rico, how you doing?
Good, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm okay. Hey, we just left the press conference a little while ago, so I was just wondering, since Coach D'Antonio told us basically that the team is just as big, they're big and strong as Michigan State is, what's going to be the difference in between two teams that are probably much on the same par, equally in size?
I think their strength for Michigan State is Notre Dame still is not set on a quarterback, and I'm old school, Earl. I believe that if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And flip-flopping back and forth, yeah, it worked with Chris Leak and Tim Tebow, but they were very different types, and they went in different situations.
Yeah, I believe in that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact that they still haven't solidified that quarterback spot and their secondary being hit by defections and injuries, I think, could become a problem. Now, fortunately for them, their weakness is also, counteracted with one of Michigan State's weakness, and that's their wide receiving play. So, I would guess if I had to look at it, I would give Michigan State the advantage at quarterback, though Maxwell is inexperienced. He's the man, and he knows that he's going to be the man.
Yes, now, we saw the receivers last week, second week in a row. So how would you portray how the receivers are at this point?
I think the word for today is inexperienced. I think they're still trying to figure out the correct rotation, a lot like what Izzo and coaches have to do in basketball to figure out the best five on the court.
Mm-hmm.
You can have eight athletes, but you can only play so many. So only so many guys can go out there. I think that you're going to have to put D'Anthony Arnett in that starting lineup or get him a little more significant playing time, because he seems to be maybe the deep threat that this team is lacking and missing. It was one catch, but he made a nice double move against Central Michigan to be wide open. So I think you have to be able to at least threaten to stretch the field, and I think Arnett will give you that best option. The freshmen came in there. They looked pretty good. But that was against, in mop-up duty. So we don't know what they'll do against, the first teamers. But Fowler looks good. He's the only one to me, Earl, that I feel confident in. Mumphries is like flipping a coin. Will he hold on to it or not? And, Lippitt seems like his confidence has been destroyed since that Boise game. Like, he's still down on himself, and now he's just trying to catch the ball and just trying not to make a mistake, and you can't do that as a Division I player. You have to be able to push that stuff aside and move forward.
Yes, that's the one thing that we've seen with all these players, especially players at Division I. They've got eight receivers, Michigan State's going to play, but only actually four of them are really going to get some significant playing time, and they have to somehow distinguish themselves. I mean, I understand D'Anthony Arnett's position. He wants to get to play more, but what does he have to do? To show him, yes, he caught one pass in a game, but I know he's got to do more than that to show them that he deserves to be on the field all the time.
Well, I'm assuming that he's got to show it in practice. Now, we're not privy to what goes on in practice, but he's got to show them in practice, and when you get the opportunity in the game, you can't drop the ball.
You have to make
the catch. You have to make the play, and that will keep you on the field. I mean, we saw that in the running game where last year Edwin Baker kept fumbling the ball, Le'Veon Bell didn't. Well, guess what happened?
Yep.
Bell became your starting back. Baker took a back seat.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we got a question for you. You got Let me see. We got Todd from Lake Orion on the line. Todd, how you doing?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, how you doing, Rico? A couple quick questions, one on offense, one on defense for me. First of all, I thought last year really dominated, Notre Dame really dominated Michigan State, especially on the interior of the offensive line. Michigan State could not run the ball. In that game, I thought Michigan State's defense actually played pretty admirably, given a lot of what the field position was and some of the cues and mistakes that the offense made. But why should I be more confident this year? I think Michigan State's offensive line has played okay. I would give it about a C, a C+. But they've got to do something, because I thought Notre Dame really controlled the interior of the offensive line last year. And then, secondly, does Michigan State have the personnel to match up with Tyler Eifert, the tight end from Notre Dame, a kid that they can move around, do some things with? Is not, to me, a real traditional tight end. I mean, he doesn't seem to be much of a blocker or overly concerned about blocking. What type of especially matchups are you think Michigan State's going to try to do with the linebackers to try to negate him? Because as much as Michigan State has inexperience and maybe some issues with wide receiver, I think it's safe to say the same thing about Notre Dame. And but does a guy like Danico Allen, in your opinion, match up good with him? Or what can Michigan State try to do to try to keep Eifert in line? Thank you very much, Rico.
Thank you.
I think to answer a second question first, you may see a little more Tawan Jones, just because he's a little bigger and more physical to handle Eifert as a tight end. When it's obvious passing downs, they may take out Chris Norman or Danico Allen to substitute them in and put Tawan Jones in there just for that particular matchup. As far as the offensive line, I think a lot of that Coach Roshan admitted last year that he basically just made a mistake in his play calling, and he went against everything that was Michigan State. He came up with the unbalanced line and tried to just out-cute Notre Dame instead of just trying to be physical and playing Michigan State brand of football. And it was quite admirable that he actually admitted it, because, Earl, as you know, most coaches will never admit when they make a mistake.
Right.
And
that's
he got
true.
Out there and was very culpable and said, you know what, guys, hang this one on me, not the player, not the head coach. It was my first big-time game, and I screwed the pooch. I messed up. I think that this year, I mean, he did the same thing against Nebraska, where he just went into max protection and, you know, and just went away from what Michigan State does. Hopefully, he's played in enough big games now that this offensive line, and it's still gelling. Skylar Berkman is in. Antonio said is back. So he still has about 8 starters that he has to negotiate into 5 spots. So I think the offensive line play, it will step up, but, you know, don't kid yourself. Notre Dame's front 7 is one of the strong parts of their team. They're very similar to Michigan State, where they rely on that front 7 of the defense to apply the pressure and to get the offenses off balance. So I think that the offensive line will be better than last year. And then even if they're just halfway better than last year, I think that's enough to put Michigan State over the top in this game.
Yes, and along with that tight end, like Coach D'Antonio told us at the press conference, Johnny Adams may have to, and the corners may have to play him a lot. It doesn't look like it's just going to be up to the linebackers, because they move him around so much, Rico. So he's probably going to see a lot of coverage, but he's going to take it. He'll probably get a chance to take advantage of sometimes the cornerbacks are probably going to have to be on him, and so that's going to give them, give him a big advantage.
Right, the cornerbacks, and you know, you can see Isaiah Lewis, but you know what? They've played against physical receivers before. It's not going to be easy, but you know what? If you're saying that you're going to be an NFL first rounder,
Yep. This
is the game that you show the world that you can handle this type of receiver or this type of mismatch.
Well, that's true, because everybody, as we know, everybody has that desire to play at the next level. So we'll see which guys step up to the plate and try to hit a big ball, a home run, or to say, and that's the key. If you want to play at the next level, you got to show up in the big games.
And now on the flip side, you know, I'm quite sure that somebody in South Bend is asking the same question. Yeah. How do we match up with Deion Sims?
Right.
So it's a two-way street there. That's why the two teams do mirror each other a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that I like the fact that you know, Le'Veon Bell's not coming off suspension, and that Maxwell has solidified the quarterback spot. I think those two things may be the difference in the game.
Yep. And, hey, how about the way Michigan State's defensive front has been playing? I've had them – they're going okay. They haven't really – to me, they haven't dominated – been a dominant team, but they've just been playing okay. But they basically, they've got the job done. And, you know, that's the bottom line. You got to get the job done somehow. I mean, I'm not sure they're playing that well, but they've done enough to get the job done.
You know what? One thing that is missing is the way Worthy would be able to jump that snap count.
Yeah,
that was always disruptive. But let's face it: in the two games that they played, they haven't had to run a lot of blitzes or do anything different. They've been able to play a base vanilla defense and get the job done. No one has scored an offensive touchdown against them, so they haven't been spectacular. They haven't been sexy. But they've been tough, and they've done the job. And I think there's probably about 119 schools in the country that would love to say no one scored an offensive touchdown against them.
Yeah, oh, so true, so true. And that's been the strength of Michigan State. They haven't given up any offensive touchdowns. It's a very big plus for them. You know, after the Central Michigan game, you know, and I asked Dan Nunes about the running game in Michigan State. He talked about how big Le'Veon Bell is. He said he noticed that, but, you know, they should – he's a strong runner. It's going to be interesting to see how many carries he gets this week, like he was asked about, the coach was asked about today, and he said he's going to get as many as they need. You know, it really sounds a lot like the George Perlis era, doesn't it?
It does. As many as it takes to get 1 point more than our opponent.
Yep.
That's how much he'll run.
Yep. So,
I think if Bell is hot, you run Bell.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you can come in there and establish Bell, then maybe you can work the play action and get the receivers and have them more balanced. I mean, ideally, you would like to see, you know, 250 yards out of Maxwell in a rushing game of about 150, 175 yards, a balanced game. You run out the clock, and you beat Notre Dame. But if it takes Bell rushing for another 200, or if Maxwell gets hot and throws for 400, I think bottom line is most State fans will just take the W.
Yeah, that's the bottom line, especially against Notre Dame. It's been such an intense rivalry for so long. You know, it's one of those rivalries you really look forward to that game. I mean, it's one of those rivalries where the teams really don't necessarily hate each other, but they really have always, down throughout history, those two teams have played very, very good and very hard games.
They have, and if it's history's any indicator, this will be another game that will be decided by 7 points or less.
Oh, that's for sure. Hey, Rico, when we look at the recruits on this team, and only three freshmen have played thus far, so he's probably, like he said, he's got to play them more, or at least give them a little bit more of a chance, doesn't he? If you're going to burn this red shirt year, so you might as well give him some pretty good chances to play.
Yeah, I think one of those guys stay, and Earl. I'm putting on I'm gonna put on the hat and say I think one of those guys ends up on a medical red shirt.
Mm-hmm.
They'll realize that they don't quite need both of them, but I could see one sticking around. The other one I think goes back on a red shirt and he'll come up with some type of season-ending injury, so to say.
Mm.
But you'll have seven receivers in the mix. I really like what Kings and Burbridge did. I'd like to see what they can do against the first team talent on defense because, you know, I've seen both play, and Burbridge can be that deep threat guy that you desperately need on this team along with Arnett and McGarrett. Kings, I'm sure when people looked and saw him, reminded everybody of Keyshawn Martin with the bubble screens and everything. So, yeah, that's a good problem to have. And if he is truly intent on playing those guys, I think you'll see a lot more of them in certain situations and on special teams. But, you know what, by the end of the season, I hate to say it, but if Mumphries and Lippitt just don't step up to the plate, you know, they may get passed up by some freshmen.
Yep. Hey, thanks a lot, Rico. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And I we'll be, as you know, we'll be talking all during the season. We got a long season ahead of us, so we'll be talking a lot more football, buddy.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
Okay, talk to you later. Right. Yep, bye bye. And that's Rico Beard talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Iran's got the UN's nuclear inspectors going in circles over one site in particular, Parchin, where they suspect Tehran tested blasts with uranium metal.
It would be as close to a smoking gun of an Iranian nuclear weapons program as we're likely to find.
I'm Neil Conan. What we know and don't know about Iran's nuclear program, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you for tuning in. I'm Scott Pohl with the weather forecast. Today will be sunny. We're expecting a high of 82 degrees. Tonight, mostly clear with a low of 55. Sunny and a high of 84 on Wednesday, and partly sunny with a high of 80 on Thursday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, it's interesting. You know, they've been playing up the Harbaugh-Schwartz or handshake from last year. And so I know we know the players. I mean, the coaches probably won't make a big deal out of it or downplay it. But, you know, we know people in the media, they're going to make that a big deal. And do you see that, Aaron, is a big problem to have, or should that just be ignored like it should be ignored? It was a one-time deal last year when Schwartz and Harbaugh had the handshake incident. Or do you think there's still more meat to be made out of it?
Nope, not at all. I mean, you and I know both how the big dogs in the media like to do things. You know, they're going to pick on the little things that don't matter for whatever reason. I still don't get it. Why media does that? No, move on. It's done. I mean, end of story. I mean, you know, if we were to sit here and dwell on those things, I mean, they're just nitpicking. And I don't remember exactly the what was said exactly. You know, after the that incident in the interviews, but you know, I think they both kind of just they said what they needed to say, and I think that was the end of that. I mean, you know, both coaches are you know, they're really into the team. They get amped up, and sometimes your emotions get out of control. You know, they're adults. They move on. It's a new season. It's just play the game.
Yeah, I'm sort of curious just to see from the team standpoint. You know. I don't think we could get a ton of out of that first game for the Lions. So, do you try to get too much out of a team after two games and try to, you know, speculate and say forecast how the team will be the rest of the season?
No, I don't even think after two games you can. I mean, there's things you can point out, or like, you know, oh hey, you know, Detroit still doesn't have a running game or some, you know, those kind of things, maybe. But, you know, it's a long season. People get injured. You know, some people, you know, halfway through the season, they finally, I guess, sort of warm up and they decide to show up to play sometimes. You know, there's just so many variables that, you know, could make a team go south or go north, basically, that, you know, it's a little difficult to say after two games, especially after the first game, you know, against these St. Louis Rams on Sunday. You know, Stafford didn't have a very good game as far as, you know, those three interceptions in the first half. Obviously, he had a good game, I think, overall, to lead him on a comeback win, basically, with 10 seconds to go. But, you know, that doesn't mean that he's going to have that kind of game, you know, every game. So, you know, this coming week, he could have, you know, five touchdowns for 500 yards. I don't know. You know, he's capable of something like that. The team's capable. Yeah. So, they say have any sort of prediction even after two games, I think it's a little much. Is there certain details you can pick out? Sure.
Okay. So we'll be looking for them, the Lions, to hopefully have a better overall game in play, because, you know, they've got another tough game with San Francisco coming into town, and then they go on the road for a couple of weeks. And then, but what's really intriguing to me for the third game, of course, Aaron, will be the chance we'll get to see Mikhail LeSure for the first time. Didn't get to play at all last year. Suspended two games, the first two games this year. We'll get to see him now for the first time in Game 3. So I'm sort of looking at wondering how much the little bit that he ran, we know they didn't show anything, of course, in the exhibition game. In the two he played in, it was very vanilla. So I'm really wondering how much we'll see and how much will Mikhail LeSure can contribute.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm not expecting much. He just frankly just hasn't been able to play. And, you know, he played a little bit in training camp, but it wasn't nothing much. There was a few things in training camp that kind of stood out, but there wasn't, you know, it's training camp. You can't really look, or not training camp, but I'm sorry, preseason, you know, and those kind of things, you can't really look into those too much. But the good thing is he's out on the field. He's getting some real game experience this time around. So, you know, I'm not expecting much the first game, but then again, you never know. Maybe the offensive line for some reason just has the defensive line's number that day and they're able to open up some holes, maybe he's able to get some good yardage. I mean, he's a big guy. I mean, you know, he's different than Kevin Smith, so, you know, he can really just grind it up the middle there and get some extra yardage. So you never know. I'm not sure, you know, not having real game NFL experience all that much, how sort of in shape he is for that sort of fast pace. I mean, you can never duplicate game experience in practice or even training camp or even preseason. So we'll just have to wait and see how he does. But I'm not expecting a whole lot out of him. But then again, if him along with Kevin Smith, that might be a nice little duel that if they can get the right play calls, they might be able to work that out pretty well.
Yep. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us at 355-9527 or toll free 877-927-8780. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we will, you know, we'll call and invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. If you want a chance to win tickets to the MSU Notre Dame game, call us at 353-5000, area code 3517-353-5000 for a chance to win tickets to MSU Notre Dame. And now let's check in and chat with Denny Schwartz, who covers Michigan State and covers some high school sports in the area, and get his take on the upcoming game. Hey, Denny, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good, Earl. How are you doing today?
Okay. Hey, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the game coming up Saturday. It looks like, it's just like Coach said at our press conference today, that both teams are just about equal in size. What do you think is going to be the biggest difference? What do you think is going to make the difference for Michigan State to try to get a win from a team that's just as big and strong as they are?
Well, I think the big issue and the one real advantage I think that Michigan State can use in this game against Notre Dame coming up on Saturday night is their receiving core. I think more than any game this year, Michigan State's going to need their receivers big in this one. Notre Dame's secondary, pretty inexperienced. Last year they struggled a lot. So far, two games against Navy and Purdue, I think they've been better. But I really think that with Notre Dame coming up and loading the box and just take away Le'Veon Bell, that Andrew Maxwell can find some holes if his receivers can get open downfield. There's going to be a lot of single coverage out there for guys like De'Anthony Arnett and Keith Mumphrey and Benny Fowler and Tony Lippett to take advantage of. And if Andrew Maxwell can find guys downfield and the receivers can not only get open but be able to catch the ball better than they did last time at home against Boise State, I think that Michigan State can definitely use that advantage. You got to remember last year Notre Dame really committed to stopping that run. They held Michigan State just 29 yards. And they really took away that run game and made Kirk Cousins throw the ball 53 times. So I think Michigan State can have success through the air if they're not having success on the ground against the Irish.
Yes, because that could be a big problem if they pull out all the stops and try to stop that passing game, Denny. We've seen, like you said, we've seen that before, and it looks like we may see it again. Michigan State, going to run into a buzzsaw, a team that's determined to stop one part of the game. But, that leaves other people open. And that's the thing I wanted to ask you about the receiving core. Does it take, what, 3 to 4 games, you think, of a new season? Before you can say this team looks like they're solid, this is going to be a good a good set of receivers. How many more games do you think that we'll be have to evaluate the receiving core?
Well, I think, you know, once you get to Big Ten play, I think that's where you're going to be able to, you know, really make a good an evaluation of this unit. That's just me personally. I think if you ask other people, it would be different. I think if you ask, you know, Michigan State wide receivers coach, you know, Terrence Samuel, he would, you know, think maybe a little different. But I do think they're progressing. I did like what I saw up Mount Pleasant, you know, against Central Michigan. I thought Benny Fowler had a great game. I thought D'Anthony Arnett, with the time that he was given, he had a solid game, you know, the double move where he had a 48-yard reception. That was a brilliant move. He looked like a seasoned veteran with that move out there. But I think this unit is progressing, and it's just really tough, you know, with the receiving count they lost last year with Cunningham and Martin and Keith Nickel at that position. It's going to be difficult, but I think this unit is coming along. And, you know, like I said in my previous answer, you know, it's going to be a big test against Notre Dame because the receivers are really going to have to come up huge against a relatively inexperienced secondary in Notre Dame.
Yes, and then, of course, you know, we heard Coach D'Antonio talk about the big tight end slash receiver from Notre Dame and how they're going to have to combat him. And it looks like the defensive backs, not just the linebackers, but they're going to have to do a good job of containing him. It certainly looks like it's going to be that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, Eifert's a real interesting weapon for them. I mean, it's a good tight end matchup in this game when you look at the tight ends in Eifert and Sims. And, you know, really, you know, when Brian Kelly's, you know, been used to in this game against Michigan State is he's really put a lot of stress on Michigan State's linebackers. I mean, I think that's going to be an important position for Michigan State in this game. You know, he has a lot of mismatches where he's, you know, putting guys in the slot where the linebackers have to cover. You know, they're going to have to cover Eifert at some points, who's a big target there in the middle, just like Deion Sims. I think it's really important. I think the linebackers really struggled last year against Notre Dame, you know, getting swallowed up on draw plays that ended up being pass plays and vice versa, you know, pass plays that would look like they would go out to the side and then it'd be, you know, Sierra Wood up the middle on a draw. And I think that's a big position that MSU is going to have to focus on this week, because with Brian Kelly, you know, they're going to try to take a lot of stress off that MSU defensive line by getting the ball out early and getting some quick plays, so that the MSU defensive line doesn't have as much time to get in there and get pressure on Everett Golson and Tommy Reese.
Yes, that's one thing about this game and this team. You know, Deion Sims is one of the best tight ends in the Big Ten, certainly. Definitely one of the better tight ends at Michigan State with the tight ends they have. When you have a guy that's that good, that talented, I know you have to find a balance somewhere between getting him the ball enough, or, you know, make sure that he's getting enough blocks in and blocking for the running game. That's going to be a challenge. I think it's a challenge for any coach to figure out how much or how little to use the tight end. Would you say that in Deion Sims' case, they're probably going to have to do that a little bit more for him, probably have to get him out in the passing lanes a little bit more so they can take advantage of his pass-catching skills?
Oh, I would totally agree, and I figured they would use him a lot this year, but I've almost been surprised at just how much they've used him through two games. I mean, obviously the Boise State game, he was the guy that Maxwell was throwing to on little hitches and short routes for first downs, and against Central he had the touchdown catch. I think he's going to be big in this game. I think against Notre Dame, you really have to control the middle of the field and make their linebackers, you know, they're great in run support, but if you put them in pass protection against a guy like Sims, that's a real tough matchup. It's a tough matchup for any team when you talk about a guy that's 6'5", 280 pounds, being able to catch the ball and get out and run block. But for Notre Dame, you know, their linebacker, that, you know, Teo is very good, but, you know, the rest of the guys are all over, you know, 235, 240 pounds, and when you get them out in space and get them having to cover someone on a passing play, I think that's going to be a big matchup advantage for Michigan State. And that's another reason why I think that Michigan State may try some more run plays outside, not in between the tackles, because I think the going is going to be real tough inside against the Notre Dame front seven that arguably, I know Ohio State's looming down the road, but this may be the toughest front seven that Michigan State sees this year in terms of physicalness.
Yeah. Hey, Denny, I know it's early, but it's the time of year, I mean, pretty soon the time will be coming up to guess which guys will be going to the NFL. How many of these juniors do you think will see leave the team maybe this year, do like Worthy and a few other juniors, and they head to the NFL?
Well, it's really tough to tell. You do have to look at projections somewhat when you take that into account. Mm-hmm. And, I think a guy like, Will Golson, obviously, he's given no indication, that he would even, opt out yet. I'm sure he's going to get a lot of questions like that.
Yeah.
At the end of the season, especially if Michigan State, continues a solid run and has a solid record and looks like they may be going to a BCS bowl. Obviously, he's going to have to field those questions. And last year, I thought Jarrell did a good job in terms of, fielding those questions and really deflecting it off and onward and after the bowl game before he really, was able to, kind of explain to the media what his thought process was in terms of going pro. But I think Golston would definitely be a guy that, may look like it. I think Le'Veon Bell is another guy that would have to consider it with a good season. Say he ends up in New York at the Heisman ceremony. I know that's a long way away, but with running backs in the NFL, that lifespan is only so long. And if you have an extra season to go to the NFL, I'm of the personal opinion that if you're a running back, you could go ahead and do that. I mean, Monte Ball came back for Wisconsin, and not only could he cost himself several rounds,
but
he may have also taken a season out of his body by coming back to Wisconsin for another year. But yeah, William Golston, Le'Veon Bell, and Johnny Adams. He came back for his senior year. I beg your pardon, but William Golston, Le'Veon Bell would be the two that I would look at for early entries in the NFL draft on this roster as of now.
Okay. Hey, give us a call. We're talking with Denny Schwartz from the Lansing State Journal. Give us a call at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. And call us up, talk sports. Hey, Denny, I know you covered some of the high school games. We've got some pretty good teams. Most of the teams I've seen in the area, the teams that stand out to me are East Lansing and Lansing Everett. Those two teams have a lot of speed to burn it, actually. We'll probably see, I will see some of the guys on each of those teams playing major college football next year. But boy, those two teams have a lot of speed to burn. I know I'm looking forward to that game at the end of the year between East Lansing and Eastern. Not Eastern, yeah. And Everett.
Mm-hmm. I Everett's really good. I'm actually going to be out there on Friday night for the whole Everett game. And I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, Holt's a little down this year. They did get a big win in their opener at Hudsonville. And that was the first time that Hudsonville had lost an opener in a number of years. They've been, kind of through the fire, so to speak. They had a couple lean years, but a lot of these kids on this team are, some of them are in their third or fourth year on varsity. I mean, this is a really experienced team. I think they're finally starting to cash all that experience in. Like you said, Earl, they got a lot of Division I talent on this team. Their receiver, Jaleel Canty, is a real explosive player. They've got a couple of linebackers that are real solid. Their defense is just real mean. The linebacking talent and the defensive back talent is probably, I would argue, some of the best in the area. They got a real experienced quarterback in Lucas Barner, who, like I said, has been there. This is his third year now. Everett, they showed some signs, late last year. I think their last four or five games, they were real solid. They knocked off Grand Ledge. They gave them their first loss of the season. They only lost to Holt by a point. And I think that game was at Holt when they lost by a point. They showed flashes right there. I think that really kind of gave a glimpse to the area of what they could be this year. And I think they're living up to that. And East Lansing, like you said, also very, very fast. They're doing a great job over there. They made the playoffs last year. They lost some guys at key positions, but they reloaded well, and they're just as fast offensively as they've been, and they have a good solid defense as well.
Okay, hold on for a minute, Denny. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
In the United States today, more than a dozen states allow corporal punishment in schools. Spanking, in other words, usually with a wood or plastic paddle. There's no shortage of debate. Advocates say the threat alone is an effective deterrent. Critics say it's not only abusive, it doesn't work. I'm Neil Conan, the paddle in the classroom. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Look for a high of 82 degrees with sunny skies today. Tonight will be mostly clear, our low 55. Sunny and a high of 84 on Wednesday. And looking ahead to Thursday, partly sunny with a high of 80 degrees. This is Scott Pohl.
And we're talking with Denny Schwartz from the Lansing State Journal. Give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. And if you want a chance to win tickets to the MSU Notre Dame game, give us a call right now at 355-5000. That's 355-5000. Call us and register for your chance to win tickets to MSU Notre Dame. You know, Denny, we've always had a very good series against Notre Dame over the years. The games have been close, have been good battles. Notre Dame did, like Coach D'Antonio said, they were instrumental. They had a lot to do with helping Michigan State getting into the Big Ten as part and parcel of it. But this rivalry, I've always liked the Notre Dame rivalry because it's two teams that, yes, they respect each other. They don't really dislike each other, but, you know, they play all the time, and they've earned to have a great deal of respect for each other. And this is one of those rare rivalries where there's not that much animosity in it.
Yeah, and I think what creates that is just because, it's not a conference game. I think one of the big things about this rivalry is, and not to say that every, you know, some games don't count, you know, more than others, but, I think what's kind of an intriguing part about this, and you could say the same, I think, about Michigan Notre Dame, too, is being an out-of-conference game, I think there's not as much tension surrounding the rivalry as there would be if Notre Dame, you know, had been in the Big Ten or was in the Big Ten currently or is in the Big Ten in the future. And, it's kind of a shame that it's going off the schedule for a couple of years. I think it's a great rivalry. It's a historic rivalry. Obviously with, you know, ABC often putting it in the 8 o'clock time slot, you know, on Saturday nights whenever Notre Dame travels to East Lansing. I think it still shows nationally that there's a lot of interest in this game.
Yes, Notre Dame, for a lot of years, or for whatever reasons, they've lost a lot of their national luster. Still a good solid program, but they're still popular, but not as popular, I guess I should say, as they used to be.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's definitely become apparent that they've lost a little bit of their luster. But, you know, there's also, with programs like this, you have to keep at least one generation interested. If you're not good for long enough, say over 20 or 25 years, you really lose that initial generation. And, the last time they were, you know, really good was 1993. They've been to a couple BCS bowls since then, but in terms of being directly in a national championship hunt, it's been a while. And, kids growing up, recruits growing up, you know, future fans of the sport of college football growing up, they don't really see that from 93 on to 2012. And I think Notre Dame's lost a lot of that generational gap to some other rising programs around the country, just because they haven't been nationally competitive as Notre Dame is usually used to, which is, you know, in the past has been chasing national championships. And, I think Notre Dame's lost a little bit of that. They've done some things differently, with the new uniforms and playing all around the country to try to, you know, recapture some of that. But I think the only thing that's going to recapture it is getting back to the glory days and being up in the top five and chasing national championships like, you know, those down in South Bend have been used to do it. After for years.
Yeah, that's the thing. They haven't been in the national hunt. Have barely been up in the top 20 sometimes. And they still get a lot of cred from the media. Maybe they get too much cred from the media. But that's the thing about Notre Dame. Sometimes that made me think: Do we as fans live too much in the past in college football? Because we prayed they had some great years, but Michigan State had great years too, and it just seems like college fans put a lot on what happened 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, or longer.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that too. I mean, like when you look at college football, it's a historic game. I mean, anytime you have a sport that's been going on, you know, 100 or 150 years, you know, it's so different. You know, with coaching turnover, I mean, there's not a lot of programs, you know, that are like, you know, a Florida State that had Bobby Bowden for years, or Penn State with Joe Paterno for years. And I mean, with as much coaching turnover as there is around the country, and new coaches coming in, going out, I think it's very easy to do to kind of relive the glory days of one coaching era or another when a team was successful, compared to say now when a team has fallen off. And I think that's why, you know, Notre Dame, for instance, you know, you go back to the Holt era, you know, even as far back as the Devine and Rockne era, when they were very successful. But lately there's been some lean years. You know, the Charlie Weiss era was not what they wanted. You know, the Bob Davey era was not what they wanted. And, you know, I think Brian Kelly's starting to turn it around, but I think the jury's still out on him as well. And so I think it's easy for Notre Dame fans to not only, you know, kind of look to the past, but also crave the past because, I mean, let's face it, they were a very successful program that won many national championships, had many All-Americans and many Heisman winners. And I think it's very easy to look back on that history. And I think it's also, to a certain extent, they're being proud of that history by remembering it and honoring it.
Yes, and we've seen that. Like you say, we've seen that a lot. I mean, the fans will go back to the past and glorify and celebrate the past histories, which is fine. It's always fine to do. But sometimes I think maybe you should look a little bit more at the present. I mean, with Notre Dame, I think, like when you mentioned Bob Davey, and they really haven't done much since the Lou Holtz era. You know, and like in college football today, boy, if you don't win in the first 2 to 3 years, you're going to be gone. And we've seen teams getting rid of coaches 2 and 3 years. Kansas got rid of the coach who was very successful, Turner Gill at Buffalo. He only got 2 years. And it's hard to establish something if you're not at least given, you know, with that 4 years. But it seems like if a coach takes 4 years to get his program together, he's not going to be there for year five or for year three, these days.
Yeah, I mean, the hook has definitely gotten shorter and shorter throughout the years. I mean, just the phrase building a program, mm-hmm. I mean, you almost seen it in the past. It's almost been like you needed multiple years to build a program, but now if you don't do it in two, you're on the line. I think with Notre Dame in particular, since you were talking about them in the question, I think it's a little bit of an identity crisis really for them. I mean, you know, with this schedule they have this year, they go to Oklahoma, they go to Michigan State, they go to USC, they play Michigan home, they had Purdue at home. I mean, they play BYU, Stanford. I mean, you know, Notre Dame fans are looking to win, you know, 9 or 10 games every year. I don't think you can do it anymore. With a schedule like that.
And
in the past, I mean, you know, the last couple of years, I mean, they were scheduling, you know, Western Michigan and Tulsa, who they lost to, and Duke, and, you know, the three service academies. And then, they even if they had won 9 or 10 games, then, you know, the schedule is a bit strong. You know, it's not a Notre Dame schedule. I think they, you know, need to make up their mind as to what they expect out of their football program. And, you know, there's been a lot of changes, like I said, with, you know, different uniform combinations and, you know, playing all over the country. You know, they play in Chicago this year against Miami. They play in Dallas next year against Arizona State to try and bolster that national brand. But I really think, you know, the product on the football field is what needs to be addressed. And in terms of where Notre Dame is, just because I think with the schedules that they put out, like the one they did this year, I don't know if you can be competitive in a top 10 stature with that schedule.
Yeah, I agree with you. I see it that it's just going to be very hard for them to get that status they want, you know, back to a contender, you know, contending for national championship with the kind of schedule. They have to play a tough schedule. I mean, you know, we can say that the TV bug has bitten them. They got the TV money. And, of course, if you're going to be on television regularly, you got to have a tough schedule. You can't put a lot of cupcakes in the TV schedule. I mean, NBC wouldn't stand for that. So, you know, they're almost captured by that own, by that contract. They got the TV contract. They've got to live by that, and they have to get nothing but good contests. So we'll just be looking at them to see if they can change it at all. But they certainly got to play a good, strong contest with teams on a very consistent level.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. And, you know, they, like I said before, they've tried to loosen it up in past years. It didn't work out because their teams, you know, weren't as solid. But, I mean, yeah, they went right back into it this year with who they scheduled, and like I said, in Oklahoma and USC. And, you know, if you look at some of their future schedules, you know, it's just as tough. I mean, and, you know, I would argue that, you know, in terms of Notre Dame's schedule this year, I don't even think that's as, I mean, I think that's even tougher than maybe even a Big Ten or a Big 12 schedule with what they play this year in terms of just looking at what they'd have to do if they were in a conference. But, yeah, I mean, they've definitely tested themselves, and definitely makes it tough on Brian Kelly, too, when you're looking at a schedule like that in year three where you really need to get a decent season at the record books. I mean, that's tough. I mean, it's a big time season for them. I mean, this is a big month when you look at Michigan State and Michigan and Stanford and Oklahoma coming up. Down the line, I mean, these are some big games for Brian Kelly, just to show how far this program's come along in his tenure.
That's for sure. Hey, didn't you want to thank you for joining us? It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. I know we'll be seeing each other at games, college games and high school games throughout the season, buddy.
All right, thanks a lot,
and
I'll take care. Enjoy the day.
Okay, thank you, Denny. That's good. Denny Schwartz from the Lansing State Journal talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Now, if you want a chance to win tickets to the game, Notre Dame game, coming up night game, coming up Saturday night, give us a call at 353-5000, 353-5000, area code 517, for your chance to win tickets. We'll register you, put you in the hat, and we'll have the drawing. We'll draw the tickets out on Thursday. So Thursday, you'll know if you're going to go to the Michigan State Notre Dame game. So we'll do this drawing Thursday during the show, and you have a chance to come by on Friday or Thursday, pick the tickets up if you're the winner. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. And we've got a few minutes left to talk sports and just talk a few things with you right here on AM 870. We know the Lions won that first game. I know I'm looking forward to Mikhail Leshoure in game three. We'll finally see him and see what he can do. That can help. That might even open up the passing game even more if you have a good, solid running game. You know, and Keith Smith has been pleasantly pretty good. You know, he came in and he got hurt. He was out mostly last year. But he came back and you had a few good games. So, you know, I think he'll stick around. I don't think they're going to release him again. He's been a pleasant surprise for the Lions. And they need a running game for sure. So they're trying to shore that up and get it back together. So we'll just have to continue to look at that and see how that goes. And really see how the passing game goes. How they use those. Because Calvin Johnson is such a dominant receiver, but he opens up so much for the other receivers to do. I mean, the other receivers should have some success. You know, whether it's a tight end or some of the receivers, they play so much emphasis on stopping the big Calvin Johnson at 6'5", and he can leap. He's just a phenomenal player. So we'll have to keep looking and just see how they utilize him, not only him, but utilize those other players against in Calvin Johnson, because those defenders, he's going to see double teams all year. No getting out of that. He's going to see double teams every single game. So how does he defeat those double teams, and how advantageous will it for them, for the Lions, to take advantage of that, of all the double teams that he's going to see? And, you know, they can't forget him at all, but they certainly got to try to take advantage of the double team. So if he's double team, sometime maybe even triple team, you're really going to have to focus in on some of the other players with him. And, of course, Stafford is still developing as a quarterback. You know, he had the great year last year, and everybody's projecting that he has another good year this year. I think he'll have a good year. I'm just not sure if he can have a year like he had last year. I mean, that was a special year. So we'll just have to keep looking and see how good he's developed and how good this team has developed. And so Aaron, let me ask you, how much do you think the Lions have developed thus far? Only a game this year, but after what you saw in the preseason and when we know what they did last year, how do you think they're further ahead of where they were a couple of years ago? How much further ahead? I assume you think they're ahead in their planning and in their game planning.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, you got your big guys on the defensive line that, you know, they're really trying to work up and Sue and Fairley is still, you know, he's still a work in progress, as is Sue. Sue still has a lot to learn on and off the field. But, you know, that defensive line, I think, is where they're, you know, they've got that figured out. Their linebacking crew is, you know, solid. It's not amazing by any means, but it's solid. You know, and they still got question marks on, you know, as far as the cornerbacks and, you know, the safeties and free safety. But they got some injuries there, but hopefully they Chris Houston, I think, should be back this week. Delmas, I'm not sure where his status stands. But, you know, compared to last year defensively, they technically should be better. It's not like, you know, they had, I think, you know, Barry had his offseason woes and they shipped him out. But, you know, they got most of the guys back. So, and, you know, most of the guys are going to improve. So, hopefully, you know, defensively, they're about should be improved. And offensively, if they can get the running game going, that should be improved, too.
Yep, that's for sure. It should be a very good season for them. All indications is they're going to have a very tough season, a good season this year, the way everything is playing out for them. So I'm looking forward to the Lions having a good year this year, having another good football season. And they certainly should work that way. You know, they are a good team, a solid team. Let's go back to the phones. We've got a caller on the line, and we've got Ray on the line. Ray, how you doing?
Well, let's pray for all those victims. 11 years ago today, we know what happened, don't we?
Yes, we do.
It's a sad, sad world we live in at times. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I was going to talk to you a little bit about Michigan State. It seemed like you guys played a lot better this last week, but you're playing, you know, not a very good team, too. But if your defense keeps playing like it has, I think you got a good shot of beating Michigan again this year.
Yeah, I would say so. I think they have a very good shot after looking at how they played the first two games. It's when you play a rivalry game like that, yeah, it's always going to be a tough game.
Well, you never know. You know, it's going to come down to turnovers. It always does in every game. If you don't turn the ball over, I think you got a good shot of beating them again.
Yeah, you have a good shot. Like you say, if you don't turn it over, and like that is always a key part of the game, those turnovers, and can you capitalize on them if you can create and get those turnovers?
Did you you have never beaten Michigan in all your history 5 times in a row?
Nope, never have.
Wow, then you got a chance to put some humble pie on them this year, don't you?
Yeah, it'll be nice if they get another win, so that's for sure.
I know, I'm rooting for you. Those rich Aryan prideful people down there, you need to humble them a little bit more.
Yeah, well, we'll try.
Okay, God bless you, buddy.
Okay, thank you, buddy. That's for sure. That's Ray calling us. Yes, I mean, it would be nice if Michigan State got a fifth win against Michigan, but of course, we know the Michigan fans definitely don't want to hear that and have Michigan State not beat them for the fifth time in a row. I'm shocked. I'm still shocked that they won 4 times in a row, Aaron. I mean, I never thought I would see four wins in my lifetime. Maybe I just overestimated that program. It's a good program for sure, but I just never thought they would lose that many to Michigan State. But Michigan State's elevated their program. That's the thing. Michigan State has come up when Michigan State fell down, and now they're pretty much on equal setting. And I know Michigan fans don't like to hear that, but they are. They're pretty much on equal as two programs. And so I think now after Michigan State gets over, whenever that streak ends, it'll go back to some teams will win, some will lose. It'll be, you know, like a vice versa thing. We'll see something like that where every team will come step forward and come to the plate in that game. But we've got a few weeks away from that, so we'll just look at that one when we get it. This week, Notre Dame is up against Michigan State. Hey, we want to thank you all for listening and thank you all for calling today. We'll ask you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on WKAR. We want you to have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and to make sure you come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a very good evening, and we'll see you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.